wonderful symmetry there. And for those of you that enjoy the JG biblical reference, three, of course, is the Holy Trinity. And we've got the Holy Trinity on the show today because Big Dave couldn't make it. He's decided to be the Judas of the Johnny and Josh show. Ooh. But thankfully, I've got JC, I've got Eric, the producer, and myself. Who's JC? Well, you're JC. You're JC. What am I saying? You're JC, JC. So what does that leave us with, Eric? Who are we? Am I Mary Magdalene?
John and Paul.
Paul. There you go. David.
Exactly.
David Ringo.
Well, no, he's not Ringo, is he? He's the other guy that got kicked out because he wasn't good enough.
Pete Best.
That's the one, Pete Best. I was trying to remember. I was thinking it was George, but that's another sport. Boys, lovely to have you on the show. And always a pleasure to meet up once a month to chat baseball with my baseball brothers. And there's lots been happening. Before we get into it, before we get into the rundown of the show, let's just focus again on the number three. We've already talked about the biblical reference. What about the notable threes? There's a few that certainly spring to mind, boys. Alan Trammell.
Trammell.
And him as well. He's pretty damn decent. Hall of Famer. Harold Baines, should he be in the Hall? There's a question mark for you.
Questionable.
Yeah, I'd say unfortunately no.
There's been a lot of uproar since he's been inducted into Cooperstown.
Great guy, though. I mean, I'll tell you, I hate to say no, because typically the players who get in who weren't good enough to get in got in because they were great guys, and the people who are voting, whether it's the veterans committee who played with them or it's the writers who had covered them, they get them into the Hall of Fame because they were great guys. So yeah, it feels bad for a guy like Harold Baines, who seemed like a really great guy, to say no, but the reality is no. But ironically,
hang on. Let's take both sides of this argument. They always talk about statistical levels for the Hall of Fame. He's just 144 hits shy of the 3,000. He was 384 home runs career, pretty damn decent. Over 1,600 runs batted in, career average of 289. He was a six-time All-Star. He's a World Series champion back in 2005 when we were doing the Channel 5 show. He won the Silver Slugger Award. His number's been retired by the White Sox. He's in the Baltimore Orioles Hall of Fame. I mean, it seems a bit harsh on the boy. He seems like a Hall of Famer to me.
I mean, I hate to get too deep into analytics, but WAR tends to be a really good determinant of how close you are. So the average WAR for a Hall of Fame right fielder is 71.1.
Yeah.
His lifetime WAR, 38.8. So, I mean, I get it. If he was in the 60 range, 65, then, you know, you make arguments around the edges. Not even close.
And in that case, in another number
and then just to add one more fact to that, is that that's being generous calling him a right fielder, right? He played a lot of his career at DH, where you need even more elevated offensive statistics.
Which brings me to my next topic, because one of those number threes who are retirees, Johnny, is, of course, Dale Murphy.
Yeah, who's not in the Hall of Fame.
Not in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And if you look at his numbers, they're pretty similar. If not far off from Harold Baines. He even has more home runs than Harold Baines, a higher WAR than Harold Baines, because now everyone's talking about, it's all about the WAR. And even though
why do you mock that? And I mean, we could do Jaws too. Okay. Jaws is the other good.
Hang on. His batting average is about 20 points below. His hits about 700 below. His runs batted in 400, but he's not even close.
He's a time MVP.
Oh, but he's a really nice guy.
He was a really nice guy. That's why I'm surprised he didn't get it for all the reasons we were talking about.
Five-time gold glove as well, compared to Harold Baines, zero.
True. Two-time NL MVP. Well, obviously, in the 80s, it was easier to win these awards.
What is that? That's the most absurd comment ever. It's based on nothing.
Brave. I thought you'd...
That is a classic Gouldie Bluff right there. Just say it with authority. No one will question me. I have a good tan.
I forgot Atlanta Brave number three retiree. So what am I saying? I'm just playing devils. I love the man.
But also Dale for the Hall of Fame. Dale Murphy, of course, who's been with us. Josh has met him. I've met him many times.
Fantastic human being.
Great guy who's come over to Europe many times to help game development on the continent and made sure that baseball flourishes around the globe. So what's not to like?
Can I point out the obvious? He's in the Braves Hall of Fame. Who needs any other Hall of Fame? Once you're there, you're in the Braves Hall of Fame. End of
it. Any other number threes?
Okay, when we come back to reality, neither of them should be in it. Of course, the greatest number three of all time, Babe Ruth.
Well, I mean, did he deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, George Herman Ruth? I mean, that's questionable, isn't it?
It was the Hall of Fame Ruth built. He was in the initial class.
He was indeed. And still, for your money, the greatest ever?
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, certainly the greatest icon of a gen. He was the greatest icon of baseball when baseball was probably at one of its two heights. So, I mean, that says a lot. You know, when baseball was most beloved in a certain period, he was the most popular player. Whether he's the best player, I probably not. I mean, I think you can make arguments for Willie Mays, make arguments for a number of other players. You can make an argument for Barry Bonds.
But surely, given his statistical achievements in an era when people didn't hit home runs, you know, he suddenly took it through the roof with a 60 total. When people, you know, the norm was down in the 20s. But someone had also had huge success as a pitcher. And, you know, we're all so excited about Shohei Ohtani for that very reason. Surely that is why he's still the greatest ever. It's not just because of the iconic status and the attraction that he brought to the sport because he was such a larger-than-life personality. But he held records for years that, okay, they've been beaten now. But he also produced on the mound. That surely for me is good enough.
I think you're making valid arguments. The two ways I would push back are, one, quite honestly, the sport has increased in terms of skill and talent so exponentially since his period. So for his time, yes, he was the greatest. The fact that he could do both, I think if you put him in a different time, those abilities probably wouldn't hold up. But the second and probably the more compelling reason to me is he played before integration. So that was an era in which he did not necessarily play against all the greatest baseball players of his time. So it's very hard to judge anyone before Jackie Robinson and say that they're the greatest because of the competition they played against.
Now, that's an argument I do accept, and I think that is a valid one. But I don't know. It's a bit like Muhammad Ali. I just think when a sportsman is as good as they were, but then transcends sport and becomes just a larger-than-life personality that attracts attention to the sport, you know, and is so iconic on so many different levels, that to me is the true definition.
Okay, I'm wielding the
but,
first.
But I agreed with that though.
Okay, I agree that it was a waffle time. Okay. It's waffle time. Yay, you guys are waffling, and we're not even like properly in the show yet.
We're still on page one.
I gotta tell you, Eric, waffling would be like, "Hey Johnny, how was your cricket match today?" Oh, that would be.
I'm amazed. I'm amazed you haven't noticed that I just rushed here like a crazy man because I'm a dedicated professional and I'm still in my whites. I didn't even have a shower, didn't even get changed. Uh-oh. And for those of you watching on YouTube, I came home with this little beauty. I just want to point this out. And it reads,
Johnny, I'll give you 60,
Riverbank.
I'll give you 60 seconds, Johnny. For Thank those you. Who are unaware, every year Johnny does his cricket thing. I'll allow you the stage for 60 seconds. Go.
Thank you for cricket. Right. Okay. Well, I played with my mates. I set up a team called the Riverbank Ramblers. Just phenomenal side. The worst team on a pitch, but unbeatable in the tea room. The Riverbank Ramblers have been going virtually 40 years. And this year, for the very first time in those almost 40 years, I won Bowler of the Year. And here is my trophy. And they even engraved underneath, "Keep it brief," because we always do a winner's speech. That's the reputation I have.
Oh, look, 60 seconds is gone already. Look,
thank you.
Eric, could you mark the time on that so we can cut it?
Yeah.
Boys, it's such an expensive trophy. You take it near a fire, it's going to melt. I can tell you that. It's literally, listen, can you hear that? That's not metal.
Ding, ding, let's move on.
Okay, moving on. COVID update. Unbelievably, it's still here. I've got a couple of my players of my four fantasy baseball teams are on the COVID IL. Carlos Correa, who isn't one of my players, is it? So it's still out there. It's still out there. It's still causing problems. What's happening in Canada, Eric? Is the border still open?
It's still open for those who are vaccinated. They've extended the vaccine mandate another month. They've announced last week. So until the month of July, you're still going to go through your vaccine mandates, and hopefully, we will see the really a flattened curve of this COVID outbreak that we've been struggling through the past 2 years plus.
Yeah,
what does that actually mean? They've extended the mandate. So what, if you're not vaccinated, you can go and play?
It's vaccine passports needed. And for those who are traveling to see Blue Jays games, let alone play in Blue Jays games, yes, you have to follow those Canadian guidelines that you have to be double or triple vaxxed.
So there are still players who aren't vaxxed who can't play. So they're basically sitting at home and it's nowhere. I wonder if they get their wages docked because they're not doing their job. And they've chosen that situation. Anyway, that's a bit controversial. Let's move it on. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you listening, thank you so much. This is the Johnny and Josh Show. We'd love you to get involved on social media. I'm going to point to the bottom just in case you are watching on YouTube. Why? Because if you go down to the bottom of the screen, you can see there's all sorts of like buttons, subscribe buttons. We'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review. Just lie. If you think we're rubbish, just lie. Just lie. Make it up. No. The brown envelope's in the post. I'm quite happy. I'll bribe whoever wants to.
So you're gonna lie to ask them to lie, because the brown envelope is not in the post. So lie to them so they'll lie.
You know that a double lie is not a lie. It's a truth. There you go.
Oh, my God.
A double negative is a positive.
It's kind of like that trophy. It's a lie.
Okay, moving on swiftly. Trivia question. Eric, what have you got for us this week? Or this month, I should say.
We've seen since we were last on air some action in Major League Baseball, namely, it's about hitting for the cycle. So my question to you, gentlemen, is which of these current active players has hit for the cycle the most times? Easy enough, don't you think? Oh, but I give you choices, three in this Dave Trinity, if you will. Is it A, Christian Yelich? Ooh. Or is it B, Freddie Freeman? Or is it C, Trey Turner? So which of those three guys has hit for the cycle the most times and currently active, that is? So answer later on in the show.
Okay, we're going to move things on. We've got three batters to get through. First up, as always, it is batter number one that is the news roundup. Very deliberate pause there for our sound effects, because we've spared no expense on the extras on this, the Johnny and Josh Show. And there's some big news stories. We obviously haven't been with you for a whole month. Loads to talk about. We're going to kick things off with the Cody Clemens debut. And for you long-term lovers of baseball, the surname will certainly ring a bell, because, of course, Cody Clemens is the son of the Rocket Man himself, Roger Clemens, who I believe came down to watch his son make his debut for the Tigers. The only problem being, JC, it hasn't gone particularly well.
Yeah, he's 0-for so far. He was 0-for-12 coming into today. So I think, we're recording this on a Sunday. The thing that always amuses me about his children, and, you know, I'm rooting for him, root for anyone who gets up to the major leagues. It's such an incredible slog. He was a third-round draft pick. You know, you're in the shadow of your dad. But you guys probably know this, right, that he had four kids, Roger Clemens. And because he's so in love with himself, I'm not a huge Roger Clemens fan. We'll tell our Roger Clemens stories over and over again. All four of his kids, their first names start with the letter K, in honor of Roger Clemens' ability to strike out people, and K being the initial for strikeout. So there's Cody, of course, but there's Casey and Corey and Kobe. Those are his four kids. All their first names start with the letter K.
You talk about taking a story about his son and making it a story about himself. I saw an interview that he had talking about his son, where you'd think that would be all he'd be talking about. And he did, in fairness to him, start out saying, I'm really happy for him. He's worked really hard to get here, blah, 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 blah. But then he started going off on the sort of tangent you're talking about. We got everyone into scramble mode yesterday to get them up here. And then he starts to go on about, you know, this is like a second home to me, because I had an aunt who lived here. I always stayed in a basement when we were here instead of the team hotel. Oh, and I went for my 300th win here. Oh, and of course, down the road at Tiger Stadium, I had my 20 strikeout game, and it was all about his career and all about him. And so I'm with you on this one. I personally do think he should be in the Hall of Fame, and I know he's not because of the whole steroid debate. But I when you talk about baseball players that you admire and like, he's not on my list.
Yeah, I kind of want his son to do better than him. I know it's not going to happen, just because all of a sudden he'd be like a little humbled, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe he wasn't the best Clemens, but. Not a huge fan. And that's tough for me, right, as a growing up a big Red Sox supporter. And, you know, Roger Clemens was the guy for a lot of my childhood. But, rooting for his son, though. Rooting for his son.
He's wearing the number 21, which, of course, is a number that his dad did actually wear as well during his career. They couldn't be more different, though, could they? If you're going to go into a game where your father is deemed to be of iconic status and had the success that obviously Roger Clemens had, it makes sense, doesn't it? not to try and do what your dad's doing. Your dad's a pitcher, so you come out and you be a hitter, you be a, you know, you be a second baseman. And obviously, therefore, his minor league experience has been completely different, because I think Roger Clemens only pitched in 18 minor league games before he came up to the majors. Poor old Cody's had to play in 325, and the way things are going at the moment, he'd be playing in a fair few more because he won't be hanging around. So
It is a reminder, though, that baseball is such a game passed down from generation to generation, that you see this so often. I was watching a video of Ken Griffey Sr. watching Ken Griffey Jr. hit his 500th home run. That was an example where the son was bet. Father was a very good player, Ken Griffey Sr., but obviously Ken Griffey Jr., one of the greatest of all time. And I mean, there is such a learned knowledge to baseball that when it's passed down, it really gives a competitive advantage, especially historically. I played with two players in college whose fathers played either in the major leagues or coached at the major leagues. And those two guys knew so much more about baseball just because of being in major league clubhouses, being around that. It's a tremendous advantage.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we wish him luck and we wish him all the best, and we'll obviously keep an eye on him. And no doubt his father's starting to feel a bit old as well. Well, in fact, he is. Thinking about it, he's 59 years old. Would you believe that really does bring home how old I am? Right. Let's move it on. This is great news for anybody who isn't a Boston Red Sox fan. And obviously, JC, you are. But the Reds have finally won at Fenway. And I couldn't believe this. It was their first win at Fenway since the 1975 World Series.
Yeah, I mean, how many games have they played, though? I mean, obviously,
different leagues, they
played a certain number of times, but not a ton.
But that is extraordinary. I mean, is this an argument for or against your rant against interleague, Eric? Because I know you hate interleague.
Yeah, everyone who knows me, I hate interleague. I hate the imbalanced schedule. I hate the fact that that we're no longer, you know, when people say, is it harder to play in the American League or National League? Irrelevant now, because it's just all diluted by this stupid interleague
and the universal DH
now. And but the fact that the Cincinnati Reds, who only played two series at Fenway Park since 1975 World Series, when there was no such thing as interleague, of course, until the late 90s. And the fact that, you know, that, and here's some interesting stats for you. The Cincinnati Reds are 6-17-1. That's right, and one. Apparently there's a tie game in there somewhere at Fenway Park since 1915. And 10 of those games is when they were playing against the Boston Braves, who were renting out Fenway Park at the time. Now, I like those sacrosanct things like, wow, you know, the Reds have never played here because they've never made the World Series and never played in the American League since such and such a time. And the league has killed that. And the fact that now we're talking about that this is the first time they've won a game since 1975 because of interleague, it's just, well, this is another reason why I hate interleague.
The more impressive stat, though, that recently came up was that the Dodgers were playing the Pirates at Dodger Stadium. The Pirates swept that series. That was the first time the Pirates had swept a series at Dodger Stadium in 22 years. So is that one okay? Because it's two National
League. That one's okay, because that's even more impressive. That's fascinating, because that those are two National League teams. And you just think, that's incredulous. How can a National League team who constantly play other National League teams have waited so long? But again, that'll be interleague ruining the whole fray there, because the Pirates wouldn't have played the Dodgers as many times against at Dodger Stadium, let alone against the Dodgers, because of stupid interleague.
It's pretty grumpy right there, buddy. I feel like they played each other so rarely. You know, that's an exciting opportunity if you're a Red Sox fan to see it, you know, a hallowed team, the Reds, or, you know, an original team playing in your stadium. And, you know, you don't get them in the World Series. It's something a little different. They don't do it all the time.
Yeah, and I'm in agreement with you, JC. I'm, you know, at the end of the day, it's not going to happen that often, but at least it happens. You can go 60 years as a baseball fan and never see two teams match up. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. I like the idea of rarity. It is still rare. Let me ask you this. How do they determine who you play? Because you look at some interleague matchups, and one, you feel for the Mets, because the Yankees have been so traditionally strong, because inevitably they play each other. How do they determine to try and make the interleague games evenly matched, so that ultimately a team isn't massively favored or disfavored by the games they end up playing?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I know historically, I remember seeing a story years ago. There was this couple, literally this couple in like some suburban home whose job it was to put together the major league schedule. This was like in the 1980s and 70s. I forget their name. And that was just their job. And they would come up with it. And, you know, obviously this was before Interleague, so they didn't have the same sort of intricacies that you're talking about, Gould.
Yeah.
But my guess is that those days are long gone. And there's a lot of time spent on strength of schedule, trying to make it reasonably even. And making it reasonably fair.
And of course, what they do is they heavily go into like, oh, we got to make it, you know, intercity rivalries and all that kind of stuff. We got to make those prominent and then forget about the Cincinnati Boston schedule. For, you know, say, oh, yeah, we haven't put the Reds in Fenway Park in a while. Just keep doing this interleague shit.
You spent 2 weeks in Finland. Was it really overcast? Did it make you that dour?
It was like, 3 weeks in Finland. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, given the fact that Eric sounds like he's going to give somebody a slap, let's move on to a story. Okay,
no, we'll tell you what.
That was a tidy segue. No, I don't want to go there.
Okay, sorry. Ignore me. I was just going to rant more about Interleague, but yes, I'll waffle myself. How's that?
Yeah.
Go nibble good, on your waffle, Eric.
Good use of the waffle. Right, this is such a great... Well, I don't want to use the word great because you should never encourage violence, but it did make me laugh, guys. I've got to be honest. Just quickly for everybody out there, this is Tommy Pham giving, was it Jock Pedersen, was it? Is that right? I can't remember.
Pedersen, yeah.
Gave him a slap in the outfield. And it turns out it was an argument over fantasy football, not even fantasy baseball, over fantasy football.
Thank God it wasn't fantasy baseball because that would be awkward. There's a lot of money that changes hands in these fantasy leagues, unlike your fantasy league. Gould, I have to say before you go off the story, I need to say that if I had have known you and I played fantasy sports for so many years, if I had known that giving a slap to an inappropriate fellow manager owner was allowable, it would have been a totally different relationship between us.
Can I point out the obvious one? If you had given me a slap, we all know who would have come out worse on that one. Okay. First things first. Right. Two.
Say with authority, Gould.
Tommy Pham was suspended for 3 games, so you wouldn't have got away with it. So it's not being encouraged. But what's so fascinating about this story is this coming together, a ridiculous argument over fantasy football league. But then Tommy Pham has now dragged in Mike Trout. Now explain to our listeners, JC, how has Mike Trout got dragged into this? The greatest baseball player of the modern era. How has he got dragged into this argument?
So Mike Trout was the commissioner of the league, and it wasn't a position that he wanted. It was sort of foisted upon him. Even Tommy Pham said, I'm too busy for this. As opposed, we really think Tommy Pham is so much more busy than Mike Trout, the greatest baseball player there is. But that's what Pham said. And so Trout begrudgingly agreed to be the commissioner of this league and apparently was permissive on some sort of injury waiver wire type of deal going on. And so Pham... partially blame. It was one of those passive aggressive blames. It's like, oh, he really, you know, it's a job he shouldn't have to do, but it's his fault anyway.
Well, let me quote you. He said, and I quote, Trout did a terrible job, man. But actually they said, Pham said laughing. So I'm not even sure he wants to be taken seriously. Trout is the worst commissioner in fantasy sports because he allowed a lot of stuff to go on and he could have solved it all. I don't want to be the bleeping commissioner. I've got other stuff to do. Trout didn't want to do it. We put it on him. So it's kind of our fault too, because we made him commissioner. So he's sort of apologizing, sort of not apologizing. I still don't even know what the argument was about. What's got him so upset that he slapped someone?
Well, this is a reminder, right? Like where we are with sports nowadays is that there's a lot of money that changes hands. That's why it's important to indicate this was fantasy football, not baseball, because there's money at stake and there was some sort of injury rule that they had in the league that was different from ESPN's injury rule. Yeah. And as a result, apparently you could make a change on ESPN that wasn't officially allowed in the league, which Jock Pedersen allegedly did, and that upset Pham because then Pham ended up losing and lost money as a result. So, I mean, Pham comes off really horribly. Like, you know, if you're spending the kind of money that you're going to have to slap someone because you're pissed about on the back end, you shouldn't be doing this in the first place. So it was just a shocking, crazy inside the clubhouse story. But you know who comes away the best without a doubt is Mike Trout, because he just by chance had an availability day with media the day after this all broke. There was no idea that this was going to break. He goes in front of the media anyway, and he acts as an utter gentleman, apologizes, very just, you know, a complete just gentleman about the whole process. Yeah. So, you know, Trout once again proves that he's kind of one of the coolest guys in baseball.
Well, it's the other story that's now running, baseball's Mike Trout's days as a fantasy football commissioner may be numbered. I think if I was him, I'd have jumped a long time ago. And as we know from our own personal experience, it is very important to have a good commissioner. I'm just going to leave that thought with both of you. Okay.
Now, the thing is, if you remember years ago, back in our Channel 5 days, just after black and white television, I went to spring training and I asked a lot of baseball players about fantasy baseball. And they were cagey about it. And, they were, you know, I asked if you play fantasy baseball, and they said, no, we're not allowed to. We can't. It's illegal. It is illegal for baseball players to play fantasy baseball.
I will tell you, though, interestingly, Scott Boras, the super agent, I had a buddy who worked for Boras for many years, and they would have a fantasy baseball league within Boras's, the Boras Corporation, within his firm. So people on the shoulder programming of baseball certainly do it. We do it, right? I mean, Gouldy, you're obsessed with it.
Apparently Johnny does it, yeah.
Yeah.
One new story that I'm not sure we had in the list, guys, before we move on, just very quickly, we've already had a managerial firing. Joe Girardi's been fired, the manager of the Phillies. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, it is early days for someone to be fired.
I think they pulled the trigger too soon, in my opinion, but not that I'm a Phillies fan.
I mean, I feel like he's the scapegoat for a lot of problems in Philadelphia that have been occurring for a while. Their bullpen, they have not been able to figure that out for years. They went out into the free agent market, picked up guys like Kyle Schwarber and Castellanos, great hitters, but not great defensively. They're not a strong defensive team. Yeah. These are things that make it very difficult for a manager to be able to turn the tide in the right direction. You have these big names and you think, oh, this is a team that should be able to compete. But when you think, you know, you go a little more in depth about the mechanics of the club, you start to say, well, it's really kind of an uphill battle that someone like Girardi would have to have. You know, I'm very defensive of Joe Girardi, played baseball, catcher like myself at Northwestern. We played in the same program and he would come back. He had graduated about, I think, 5-6 years earlier than I did. Would come back and it was just an amazing, great guy, great player. And you know, had some great years, obviously, with the Yankees and even did well with Miami when they were Florida Marlins before that. I think one thing you have to look at with the Phillies since Charlie Manuel left, that they have just rolled through managers. You know, there was Ryan Sandberg, there was Pete Mackinnon. I think there was one other one, and then Girardi, that they're having a hard time figuring the right fit to run their club, and they keep on making those changes. And at some point, you have to look, you know, to the front office and maybe ask whether there's some sort of more fundamental issues.
So Rob Thompson as an interim manager, I don't know anything about him. What's your knowledge of Rob Thompson?
Yeah, I mean, he's been around a long time. He's a baseball lifer, Canadian. You'd be happy to know, Eric. It's interesting when you put the interim tag on for the rest of the season. You know, that can either work if the players like that manager, they're going to play harder for them to give that guy an opportunity to take that interim tag off. If they don't, it could be just an incredibly listless final part of the season, or more than final, 2/3 of the season almost.
And that's what the world needs now, more Canadian managers. There you go. Moving on.
Okay, moving on. Badoo Watch, for a quick reminder for all our listeners. Last season, we latched on to young Akil Badoo, and our listeners came up with a great name for the segment, which was A View to Akil. That was just one of the offers, which we loved. He was the rookie phenom. I mean, I say he was a phenom. He wasn't so much a phenom, but he had a pretty decent season. But what we loved about him, he hit a home run in his first at-bat on the very first pitch in his debut. His family were there. They all went crazy. It was great footage. That's why we love him. He then went and hit a grand slam in his second game. I mean, what a start to his career. He hits a walk-off hit in his third game. So he's basically a hero in game 1, 2, and 3. He made highlight reel catches in the outfield. So he's great defense as well. But the big question now, Eric, update us. Is the fairy tale over for our dear friend, Akil Badoo?
Well, we were hoping that his numbers would continue, that he would flourish in his second season here. But alas, he's been sent down to AAA. He's now playing for Toledo. And not only that, he's now injured at Toledo with the Toledo Mud Hens, the affiliate for the Detroit Tigers. And let's face it, if you're only hitting, you know, .140 in the first 17 games of the season and your on-base percentage has dropped 130 points, yeah, I think you're going to be sent down.
Can we continue to follow a player in the minors? It seems pretty brutal to just
I mean,
cast
we,
him
we
to
are,
the wolves.
We are a minor league podcast in terms of our quality. So perhaps we should, but I think that we should aspire to greater things, Gouldy.
Okay. Exactly. So, all right. Well, then we've got a couple that we could look at. Okay. That we could consider. And I'm open to listeners or you guys coming up with anybody else. Stephen Kwan is one. Seth Beer, and we've already had a few suggestions for the name, which is just as important as the individual. Martin, at Just Mar on the Twitter site, said, if you're going to start following Stephen Kwan, surely it has to be Quantum of Solace. I quite like that. Somebody else came up with Kwan You Believe It. That's pretty good.
Was
that you, Eric? Oh, yeah. I like that. I like that. I wouldn't have liked it if I'd known it was you. Seth Beer, this is definitely you, isn't it, Eric? The Beer Necessities. Yeah. Great reference to Jungle Book. I love that. That's good.
I'm gonna throw out some other players, two other names.
Go on then.
Jose Quas, who is a relief pitcher for the Kansas City Royals. A wonderful story in which he played baseball in college. I believe he went to University of Maryland. Was drafted in the 11th round as a positional player. Just didn't go well. Ended up getting released. Decided to move back to Brooklyn where his family lived, and he was working for FedEx. His brother every day told him, "Don't give up on your dream." And Quas would work at FedEx all day long, and every night his brother would say, "Let's go out to the park. I want you to throw with me." And he did it every day to the point where all of a sudden his arm strength was impressive, and he got good enough to try out to play professional baseball again. Got back into professional baseball, and he debuted this year with the Royals. He's thrown two scoreless innings so far.
Fantastic. I love that story.
He posted a picture on Twitter of him with all these FedEx packages in the cold as a FedEx. The other guy is a personal one, which is John Schreiber, who we've interviewed on the show before, who had a couple of brief cups of coffee with the Tigers. It did not go well. Was able to revamp. He's a sidearmer, so which is a little interesting down below, more of a submarine guy. Was able to revamp and rework, keep on battling. He's now with the Red Sox. He has a 1.26 ERA with two wins. And he is the last player who I represented as an agent who is still playing professionally. So
now the thing is, it's all
that's just totally selfish.
It's all now here's the thing. It's all fine and dandy if we find these hidden gems, these diamonds in the rough, these diamonds in the diamond, that have great background stories that we can follow the rest of the season. But unless their name can be turned into a very clever pun, forget about it.
Yeah. And I'm looking at both of them, and I'm hoping to be.
I think Quas you could do. Schreiber, probably not. Quas, I think you might be able to come up with something.
Quas me a river? I don't know. Yeah. No. No.
You got to give it some time.
This
gonna
is going to be a very long podcast.
Let's leave it to our viewers and our listeners. How's that?
Yes. I'm loving that. Okay. So there you have it. Stephen Kwan, Seth Beer, Jose Quas, or John Schreiber. Those are the four options, it seems. If you can come up with a decent name, we don't care how useless they are, that will get the vote. So moving on swiftly, batter number two. And this is the return of the Castellanos curse. I'm, of course, talking about Nick Castellanos, who yet again, and this has happened on a number of occasions, has interrupted another somber moment by hitting a home run. I mean, this is hilarious, but it's also not hilarious given the subject matter. But this is an uncanny ability of young Nicholas to hit a home run, it seems, JC, at the most inopportune moment. Just expand on this for our listeners, please.
Well, first off, would you call it a jinx necessarily? It strikes me that like he's trying to up the mood. So talking, you know, there was a discussion about someone who was sick, passed away, and then he gets a big hit. And so that's not a jinx, is it? Is that the opposite? It's just a
I know they're calling it the Castellanos curse, which is weird, but I know what you mean.
See, I think it's
not really a curse, but just the fact that anytime a commentator is in the middle of a really somber, like very deep and meaningful, you know, homage to somebody who's passed away or somebody who's been in trouble, there goes a home run by.
Right. I could see it if like every time they were talking about it, he struck out, right? Like that would be a curse on Castellanos. True. Right, like that works for me. That's
but he's ruined the mood. He's ruined that moody moment of
you're looking at it from a producer standpoint, right?
I am because like, obviously
we're going gravitas.
Hey, imagine you guys are going like, oh, sadly, so and so has passed away. Oh, and there's been a home run for it's
which is exactly what happened because it happened on last Monday. The Phillies TV broadcaster Tom McCarthy was paying tribute to Memorial Day veterans who made the ultimate sacrifice. That was their word. And at that very moment, suddenly there was a home run being hit by the man himself. So this touching moment was completely destroyed. And apparently it's not the first time. He just has an uncanny habit of hitting balls into the home run, into the cheap seats, just as they're talking about something that they want everybody to focus on.
So Gouldy, a good broadcaster could term that right, which is, and here Castellanos hits a home run in honor of those players.
Yeah,
you know, and a 100%. Somber voice. If you do it right, it's hard to do.
Yeah, but then, you know, they've never come looking at Channel 5 Baseball to find those great broadcasters. That's their loss. Although, strictly speaking, it's our loss. But it's interesting because I think they've used the word curse deliberately because, as we know, baseball and curses is the one sport where it's inundated with curses. And the obvious ones, the curse of the Bambino, the curse of the Billy Goat, the curse of the Black Sox. Yet there are many others.
Well, you know, interestingly, Eric used the term jinx. That was actually originally a baseball term. We use that interchangeably as someone who creates, you know, that sort of problem in any walk of life. But it started in baseball at the start of the 20th century. I don't know the exact derivation of why the term jinx. There's a whole argument about where the word came from. But it was a baseball term. And I think it makes sense because really, I mean, all sports have their superstitions. But baseball, in a long season, people get very focused on superstition. And when things superstition goes south, that's the home of the jinx.
So did you, when you were playing minor league baseball, did you come across some really weird ones? Because we've discussed this on definitely on a show last season or even first season, some of the more extreme ones about underwear and stuff. But what about your own personal experience?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, the famous Bull Durham where he wears the, you know, the under
the suspender
garment,
yeah.
Right? The suspender belt. I'll say two of the most popular ones were when pitchers leave the field, you don't touch the white line. So you step over it. You can't step on it. The second one is when there's a third out that the ball needs to land within the dirt of the pitcher's mound, that if it ends up on the grass, it's a bad sign. Those were two popular ones when I was, you know, playing. Obviously, there were a lot of superstitions about with, you know, 2-2 count with two outs. You take off your hat, you start shaking it. That was like one of the things you were meant to do with a 2-2 count and two outs. Just there are a ton of them. There's a lot of free time in baseball, right? There's a lot of time of sitting around giving yourself an opportunity to create conspiracy theories till the cows come home.
And you know, of course, it's not unique to baseball because, as you both know, I was once a spectacularly unsuccessful professional actor. And in the acting trade, when you are performing in the Scottish play, you're not allowed to reference its real name. I'm talking, of course, the play by William Shakespeare that begins with M.
Macbeth.
That's the one, yes. You're not allowed.
I mean, break a leg, right? Yeah. I mean, the famous line, break a leg is the ultimate. Yeah.
You're not allowed. It's supposedly, it is jinxed. And I mean, I used to think it was ridiculous. I used to get in a load of trouble because I've been in Macbeth at least, what, twice, three times? And I'd be
walking
around.
Did you
play
the skull or what?
The skull, that's Hamlet. You clearly don't know your Shakespeare. Macbeth, yeah, I played the lead, buddy. You must remember I told you this story. 1989, a tour of Japan, 3 months. It was my one big professional success.
I could see why you succeeded, because they didn't speak the language.
Exactly.
You just spit a lot, looked a little crazy, and they were like, perfect.
Hey, buddy, I learned that part in 3 weeks. That was the most stressful 3 weeks of my life. I had to not just learn the whole of Macbeth in 3 weeks, but I also had to learn two stage fights, one of which lasted 15 minutes. One of them, 15 minutes. Okay, so it was a very stressful experience. But you're completely
sure you
enough.
You didn't play Reagan.
No, I played the real deal.
I love how this is so baseball related.
Sorry, it's worth having because it's a great story.
You know what it is? It's Gouldy as our Roger Clemens, right? Like we're meant to talk about baseball, but he needs to bring it back.
Bring like the Macbeth like in Japan.
This is a great story. You gotta allow me to finish it. We played
I'll give you 30 seconds.
Okay, 30 seconds. We played our opening show on the island of Hiroshima, where the Japanese have a Scottish festival. So we arrived to perform our opening night to this festival, and everywhere were Japanese men and women in kilts. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. But you're absolutely right. They didn't speak English. The whole show, you didn't get any response. You thought they're hating it. And then at the end, they gave us a standing ovation.
Because it was
experience.
Over. Because it was over.
That's probably true, mate. Yeah, absolutely.
And, call me crazy, but Hiroshima's on an island.
Did I say Ireland?
Yeah, the island.
Oh, I apologize.
I'll cut that out, don't worry.
Okay. There's no way.
Is this not an island?
That's not being cut out.
Okay. Yes. He's so not going to cut that out because that's the sort of human being you are.
Oh, yeah.
You're the Roger Clemens of this podcast, Eric.
Moving on.
Right. Manager mistakes. This is quite an entertaining story. Rules mayhem. We are, of course, referencing specifically what's just happened with Dave Roberts, with the Dodgers playing the Mets. Didn't know the rules. They were down. That was Saturday night, wasn't it?
Just down gone. By five.
They were down by five. And because he thought it was a white, he basically ran out the white flag, which amazes me. For a lineup like the Dodgers, you're accepting defeat with a whole 3 outs still to go because you're down by five. But apparently he tried to bring in a position player to pitch the last inning to save his bullpen. And it was then pointed out to him by the Mets that actually that's not allowed. The rules very clearly stipulate you have to be down by 6 runs or more. So you've got a manager who doesn't even know the rules, caused an enormous amount of delay. And in the end, he had to bring in one of his bullpen arms to pitch the last inning. And of course, he'd already said to his team, we're not going to bother to try and win this game. That's the issue for me, JC. I cannot understand any manager accepting defeat when there's still a chance for victory.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a bit odd because it was still reasonably close. 5 runs is quite a bit, especially in today's major league game, right? When you've got the type of open arms that come in. No, I'm saying the opposite, which is like, I get why 5 runs may feel insurmountable when you have the type of bullpens that we see nowadays. But, I hadn't looked carefully at how the Dodgers have been using their bullpen leading up to that game, right? So maybe they were a little bit taxed more than normal, and maybe they just wanted to save an arm. And so, I get it. Rules are tough in baseball. This one I'm a little surprised at because it's a relatively recent rule, right? This whole idea about limiting your positional players coming in, that's something that's come up over the last couple of years. So I'm surprised Dave Roberts didn't know it. But, I've had instances where I've messed up the rules, and I consider myself reasonably knowledgeable about baseball. It just
example. When did you mess up?
I love that you want to hear me mess up story. Shocker, right? My final weekend playing for Great Britain, we were playing a friendly against Ireland, and I was on first base, and I had taken big lead, really sharp line drive to the third baseman, who catches it, looks to throw to first to double me off, throws it into the stands. So it's called dead ball, and you get an extra base when the ball's thrown into the stands. So I immediately then go to second base. Another ball is brought into the game. Pitcher steps off the mound, throws to first base. I'm called down because I didn't realize that the rule was that even if the ball is thrown in the stands, I knew that if the ball was not thrown in the stands and it was caught, I had to go back to effectively tag up. But I thought that when the ball is a dead ball and thrown into the stands, that I could then take the base without having to go back. But I was meant to, even though the ball is thrown in the stands, go back to first base, touch it, and then go to second base. I didn't know that. So,
Wow.
And I played baseball my whole life too, and I take it very seriously. It was humiliating.
Well, if it's any consolation, buddy, as you both know, I was playing cricket today. I'm still in my whites. And there's been a rule change just of late. The old rule was if you hit a ball up in the air and the runners cross and the ball is caught and you've crossed when the ball is caught, then the guy who's not out is now facing because you've crossed. That was the old rule. So these two, the bloke hit it up in the air, they crossed, we caught him out, and the guy was taking up his, instead of the new batsman coming in, which is why it was an advantage thing to do. The guy who was already in was going to face and therefore could protect the new batsman, give him a chance to see what's happening, et cetera, et cetera. And it all kicked off and they were saying, no, you can't do that. The rules have changed. The rules are now very clearly stipulate that you can't do that. And that regardless of whether you cross, the guy coming in has to face. And it turns out that for the amateur game, the rule doesn't come into effect in October. So how confusing is that? It was a different rule for the amateur game as there was for the professional game. None of us, but one person knew that, who then clarified. And so fisticuffs weren't had and everybody went back and enjoyed the game. So it's true of every sport, buddy.
I just feel like we're looking to get pissed off at people too much in this world. Like, give Dave Roberts a break.
Yeah.
I mean, people went nuts over this. Like,
well, and didn't Steve Cohen, the Mets manager, didn't he get into him on a tweet?
I thought I'd saw something on Twitter, but I couldn't find it again. But,
Oh, so maybe we've just libeled.
You just
the multi-million outlet.
Exactly.
Josh says a Steve Cohen hates Dave Roberts.
Eric, did you say that? Because I definitely didn't say that. I never made that accusation. Did
Josh,
I think it was Josh.
Josh said that.
With friends like these, I tell you. With friends like these.
But yeah, I mean, it brings back memories as well when you talk about the bases and taking a base. Because I played on my radio show. I don't know if you know that I'm presenting a radio show on Radio Bath every Tuesday, 2
in North
4.
Bath.
No, it's not North Bath, the whole of Bath. Okay.
Or North North.
Do you need a ham radio to hear it? Is it like a CB, like for truckers?
It's not a trucker's radio. It's a local for the local, the dwellers, the livers, the residents of Bath. And it's just, you know, it's me and Louise, my lovely Lulabelle, my co-presenter, boyfriend, girlfriend, interesting dynamic. You have to listen in every Tuesday, 2 till 4. They basically, we played Meatloaf's one about, you know, the great, was it Paradise by the Dashboard Light, which of course, unbeknown to Louise when I played it, has massive sexual conversations about taking first, taking second. Because didn't you reference this in the origins of this in one of your many wonderful books that you've written?
Wow, a reference to one of my books, Gouldy, that's a gift of gifts.
I've read them all, buddy. I've read them all. They're all in my toilet. I've read them all.
Best read, I gotta be honest. Not inside the toilet, but near the toilet adjacent, please. So I wrote a book called The Field Guide to Sports Metaphors. And in it, I talked about the history of that and how it turned from being just a very benign, getting to first base really just meant at the start of the 20th century, getting to the first step of something. And then it slowly worked its way into getting to first base in terms of getting a date. And there were some early references there. And then we got into, you know, the 60s and, you know, sort of the free love stuff. And that's when it started to make its move with the height of its metaphorical meaning occurring with Meatloaf and Paradise by the Dashboard Lights in 1977.
Do you know what they say about men that write about sexual connotations? I think you know. I don't think I need to expand on that. I think our listeners understand.
I'm so happy this is
some of us do, others just write about it.
Oh my
Moving
God.
On.
Oh God.
I'm Moving so on. Sad for you right now. I'm just so sad for you.
I'm sad for my editing.
Yeah.
Okay. On that note, since neither of you have taken the hook, we'll move on. It's time for the seventh inning stretch. Okay, this is Eric's time to shine, which is a contradiction in terms. Baseball book of the week, first of all, Eric. What have you got for us?
Well, we've reached a point of where we actually have to mourn a passing of a very esteemed member of the baseball literature, penmanship, if you will, perhaps even a poet laureate of the game. Roger Angel has passed away at the age of 101, and it would be a cruel injustice if I didn't actually mention his. To be honest, I've only read The Summer Game out of his, but I have read his articles in New Yorker over the years. But what actually caught my eye is there was one year where he said, it kind of echoes what I feel. He said, I'm disgusted with the way the game is going nowadays. It's no longer the game I love. There's been too many rule changes. There's been too many changes implemented into the sport. It's no longer the sport I recognize. And he said that in 1977. But he kept on writing. And then, of course, he just went with the flow, unlike me, who just pissed off with Interleague and other things in the sport.
Roger Angel was more than just one of the great scribes of baseball literature. He was really a person who saw the full expanse of all of American literature from the start of the 20th century up until when he passed away. He had worked before he even started writing about baseball as an editor. His mom had been an editor at the New Yorker, and he basically took her job. He had written some, but then edited all the greats who had come through the New Yorker over the years, not necessarily baseball related. And then somewhat in the middle of his career started writing about baseball and really touched upon, you know, and been in clubhouses for a 60-year period. And I mean, it's heartbreaking when you lose that institutional knowledge. Because you saw Roger Angel when Ken Burns did his baseball movie, but like, or his series. But, you know, you want to have those people around to be able to remind you of why the game is so important and so valuable to the whole sporting landscape. And the loss of him is heartbreaking from that standpoint. Great writer, great chronicler of the sport. You know, hearing him talk about it, not just write about it, was special.
It's very eloquent. And again, so in conclusion, I guess if I were to recommend the baseball book of the week, it would be The Summer Game. And I've only read excerpts of Five Seasons, A Baseball Companion. Those are my recommended baseball books of the week. But there's other great publications out there written by Roger Angel. Rest in peace. You shall be missed.
And Eric, just before we do move on, that you referenced the term the poet laureate of baseball, which was something that was written about him. Interestingly, he actually rather disliked it. He wasn't a big fan of that, even though it's an incredible compliment. He was held in very high regard.
Completely.
And the awards, just have a look at the awards that he received for his writing. I mean, the man was amazing. Inducted into the baseball reliquaries. Is that a word? Reliquary?
Reliquary.
What is that, Jason?
This is like sort of like this bizarro alternate Hall of Fame in which they look for people and objects and artifacts that reflect baseball that you might not think of first and foremost. Okay. So, for example, there was a famous instance in the minor leagues where a minor league catcher took a potato and carved it to make it look like a baseball and did a fake pickoff play where he took the potato and chucked it into the outfield. And so someone tried to come home, the pitcher had the ball and threw it in. It was a huge story at the time. And they had that potato. I don't know if they still have it, but it's sort of like this really interesting, like looking at baseball as sort of a cultural place. And Angel obviously reflects that, not in such a silly way as the potato, but
Buddy, I'm so glad we have you on this podcast, because sometimes you just come out with the most wonderful gems of information. And he was inducted into that Shrine of the Eternals in 2010. And I imagine from what I'm understanding of him as a personality, he probably loved that, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, again, really interesting guy. Baseball was a huge part of his life, but not really reflective of everything that he did. Yeah. He was an amazing writer, full stop, not for one genre, but in all aspects of his abilities in that space.
Well, because he was a travel writer as well. I mean, he didn't start writing about baseball till 1962 when he was, 42 years old. So, yeah. Anyway, I agree with you, Eric. Rest in peace. Well, a great loss to the game of baseball, but he will be remembered. Roger Angel. What's your cultural reference this week, big guy?
Well, I thought I'd also go down the route of songs. Your favorite segment, Johnny, music and baseball, when they cross over or become part of the vernacular. Now, I've chosen Nat King Cole.
Oh, I love it already.
Now, Nat King Cole was taken away from us way too young age of 45 years old. But he was a huge baseball fan. Not many people know this about Nat King Cole with that velvet voice. He actually tried out to get to the Negro Leagues back in the 40s. But more importantly than that, he was a huge baseball fan. And he was a huge Los Angeles Dodgers fan, even though, like, you know, they only moved to L.A. in 1958. By the time he passed away in 1965, he was already a full-fledged, constantly listening to Dodgers games on the radio wherever he's traveling, if he can get them. Of course, it would take somebody who's this talented and this much of a baseball fan to come out with this song.
My sermon today, said the Reverend Jones, is baseball and whence it came. If you take the good book and you take a good look, you will find the first baseball game. It says Eve stole first and Adam second. Solomon umpired the game. Rebecca went to the well with the pitcher. And Ruth in the field made a name. Goliath was struck out by David. A base hit made on Abel by Cain. And the prodigal son made a great home run. Brother Noah gave checks out for rain. Now old St. Pete was checking errors, also had charge of the gate. Salome sacrificed Big John the Baptist, who wound up ahead on the plate.
Well, I said I was going to love it, and I do. I mean, regardless of the tune, the lyrics, which are actually quite witty and clever, it's just one of the greatest voices that God ever created. So it gets a thumbs up from me, big guy.
And then a lot better biblical references than yours, actually, at the top of the show. And
it's not exactly tough, is it?
My humble opinion. By the way, a lot of people know this. Frank Sinatra's favorite singer as well.
Is that right?
Frank Sinatra, he would unwind to Nat King Cole records when he got back to his hotel room. Now there's another Nat King Cole song that he penned and recorded. Now this song goes out to all you parents out there who have children getting into baseball or currently playing Little League baseball, and it sort of tugs at your heartstrings, if I could use that term, and it's called Goodnight Little Leaguer, and it goes something like this.
Hit the hay, you freckle rookie. Put your bat away. You have played your baseball for today. Better hit that dreamy dugout, then put out the light. Good night, little leaguer. Good night. By the way, you freckle rookie. Gee, I'm proud of you, stealing all those bases like you do. With your halo in your pocket, almost out of sight. Good night, little leaguer, good night. From the moment that you warm up with all those other guys, you're in the game to win and not to lose. When you hang your uniform up, no matter what your size, no Ruth or Willie Mays could fill your shoes.
You well, may you're two for two on the night, Eric. I'm loving that as well. Good night, little leaguer. Another Nat King Cole classic baseball song. Although, if we're going to choose one, and I assume we are, because we don't normally have a choice, have I got to choose one at the end?
We'll make a decision at the end of the show. How's that? Which one we'll play in full?
I love time and place with music. I mean, just how sweet and innocent it is. You think nowadays, like, it would be like Goodnight Little Travel Ball Player as you go across the U.S. playing other teams in cutthroat games with angry fathers.
That's true. Yep. Throwing it's garden like, furniture. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, you know, different time. Love me some Nat King Cole.
I used to listen to Meatloaf before a rugby game just to get myself pumped up, you know, ready to do some damage. All 9.5 stone of me ready with my
Buffon
haircut.
I love how these stories are so baseball related.
I know, Gouldie. You just got off the rails, buddy.
But guys, I've played 8 hours of cricket and I drove 400 miles. I'm absolutely exhausted. I'm running on vapors, just happy I'm still awake. Just happy I'm not snoring. Anyway, what else are we going to talk about?
Now, apparently, there's a trivia question I got to put you out of your misery with.
Oh, yes. I meant to tee that up, aren't I? Just remind us what that question is, buddy.
I asked you about hitting for the cycle.
Yeah.
And I asked you which current active player, leads the league and most times hitting for the cycle.
Right.
And was it A, Christian Yelich, B, Freddie Freeman, or C, Trey Turner? And who shall go first?
Can I offer you my logic? Because normally I don't have any logic. I just guess. My logic here, and I think you're going to be impressed by this, JC, is that to complete a cycle, it isn't just that ability to hit in the right place. It's also about speed around the bases. So as much as it guts me, I'm taking Freddie out. Because compared to the other two, Freddie is a bit slow. So I'm going on the basis of who's the quickest runner of the three. And so therefore, on that basis alone, that logic, which I think is sound, I'm going Trey Turner.
Okay.
Now, I know these three have all had cycles. So it's going to be close. It's going to be one of those like 4-3-2 or something like that. I'm going to take Yelich and I'm going to give David Freddie Freeman so that David can get a win, even not being here in absentia if it is Freddie Freeman.
Yes, we've got, I think Johnny forgot to mention that David's on a flight to San Francisco right now.
I didn't forget. I chose not to mention it. He can't be bothered to turn up. He doesn't get a mention. It's a brutal world. Deal with it.
He's flying 35,000 feet above the air.
Eric, I'm not giving him a little sticker that says, well done for not turning up.
Oh, poor guy's got to work.
This isn't some primary school sports day. This is real life. He can't be bothered. He doesn't get a mention.
Back to the trivia answer. So Johnny's locked in his answer with Trey Turner.
I have locked in.
And Josh has actually said Chris Yelich, the Milwaukee Brewers.
It was also quick, so I could easily have gone with Yelich, but I chose not to.
Freddie Freeman was the answer.
There you go.
No, it wasn't.
No, he was so on the
Freddie, answer. Freddie Freeman's actually hit for the cycle twice in his career so far. Okay. And Canada. Okay. But he's not the answer. Kristen Yelich has hit for the cycle three times, most recently this month. Well, sorry, last month in May.
Wow.
His third one.
I think you got this, Goldie.
And Trey Turner has had a grand total of three as well. So there were two.
JC! Hey, buddy.
I'm hoping you both go for Freddie Freeman.
Hey, we could share it. You can have my trophy for 6 months, and I'll keep it for the other six. How does that
sound? I know how much it means to you. You keep it for all 12, buddy.
So there's your answer. Well, by the way, Brock Holt, who's still technically active, has hit hit for the cycle twice as well. But
did any of them hit for the natural cycle? You know what the natural cycle is?
Oh, that's a good point. I I'll have to double research.
Goldie, you know what the natural cycle is?
No.
Hit a single, then a double, then a triple, then a home run.
In sequence.
In the order. So that's the significance of it, is in order, right? Okay. But that must be really rare, isn't it? You're talking about great players who've only hit three of all the active players. And they're the leaders. I mean, presumably, a perfect one.
It must be a bummer sometimes when if you're a batter and the only thing missing is a single and you're at bat and then you hit a home run, you go, oh god,
I don't know about that.
I'm not sure they'd be too upset, man. Brilliant stuff. Loved it. Loved great trivia. I got it right. I share the prize. I'm leading. Have we done any others? This is show three, so I assume we have. Did I get any of those right? Let's just assume I did. All wrong. Okay. Moving on. We're nearing the end of the show. Lovely to have your company. For those of you still listening, we started with whoever we started with. Have you still remained? I'm sure you have.
The mailbag.
So that means we need to encourage you to get involved, guys. This is, of course, the Johnny and Josh Show on Facebook and the Johnny and Josh Show on Twitter. It couldn't be much easier. So if you want to get in touch, even if it's just to say hi, even if it's just to say, can you propose on my behalf to my beautiful girlfriend, whatever, we'd love to hear from you.
The problem with the monthly show, right, then they're going to have to really plan ahead.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it can't be like, hey, next week, can you do it? It's got to be.
What are you saying, that if they write in week one and say, I want to propose, and then they have a massive argument, so week three, they say, Goldie, cancel the proposal. Can you ask for a divorce? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying a lot can happen in 3 weeks.
Four weeks. Especially in a relationship. Absolutely. Of course, you're the man that writes about relationships, so we know that.
There might be scope, no promises here, there might be scope for maybe going twice a month for a month or two.
For a month! And that's maybe meant to be something to get excited about.
You're getting people excited. I know exactly.
Yeah, so we'll figure out a few months.
Did I say, you know what that'll be? It'll just be Eric. Hi, everybody. Yeah. Nobody else bothered to turn up, but
you know what it is? It's going to be the sound of him eating a waffle. It's going to be his new podcast called The Waffle.
The Waffle. Absolutely.
Eric's Waffle House. Yes.
Eric's Waffle House.
Big up our social handles, it says here on my screen, which means I point at the bottom of the screen. I have no idea why to this day, three seasons in, and I still have no clue why I'm doing that.
You'll see, you need to go on something called youtube.com, Johnny, and then you'll see these buttons.
They're pictures, Johnny. And
hey, guys, I'm on YouTube. I'm on YouTube. I did a recent video that got 4 or 5 million viewings. Okay. I went viral. Johnny Viral.
You're a virus, Schoolie. There's no doubt about that.
I knew that was coming. I saw you.
You're the monkeypox.
Yes, monkeypox Schoolie.
See, I just set them up and you boys put them in the back of the net. I'm the provider. I'm the assist man. Anyways, lovely to have your company. Don't forget Fantasy Baseball. Apologies, we took a week out last week. James is unbelievably busy at the moment, but do join us on Behind Home Plate. That's at HBHP Pod with Jimbo, James Holden, the Fantasy Baseball legend. And I'm there as well, just to prove that you don't have to be any good at it to present a podcast on it. Do check out the Nat Coombs Show as well, at the NC Show. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube, we're everywhere. You know, call it social media. Might as well call it the Johnny and Josh media, because we're all over it like a bad rash. Guys, you've been fantastic. As always, been an absolute pleasure. What are you up to this week? Anything you want to share with the listeners?
Nah. Well, I just got back from Finland. 3 weeks in Finland. Okay. With the World Championships, the World Hockey Championships. And congratulations to Finland to actually beating Canada in overtime in the final. The city went absolutely, of Tampere, Finland went absolutely bananas.
Were you okay with that?
Hey, you know what? It's good for the sport when Canada loses.
Yeah.
Because it means other teams are given a chance.
Well, especially if it's the home team. If it's the home team.
The host nation winning was actually great for the sport. And Canadian dominance in the sport is detrimental to the game of hockey.
Have you been doing any curling or writing any more books about reproduction?
I've never written a book about sexual reproduction. I did write a book called The Secret History of Balls.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with urology.
That's a family show, please.
I just started this new job. So working hard.
How's that going? Is it going well?
It's going well.
Well, that's it for episode 3, season 3 of the Johnny and Josh Show. Thank you to all our listeners for joining us. Thank you to JC. Thank you to Eric. Always great to get together with my baseball brothers. We wish Big Davey Lengel a safe journey to San Francisco. Hopefully he will be back the next month. But until then, you take good, guys. Keep subscribing. Keep hitting the like buttons. Checks in the post. You know the story. We'll leave you with Nat King Cole's The First Baseball Game. Enjoy.
My sermon today, said the Reverend Jones, is baseball and whence it came. If you take the good book and you take a good look, you will find the first baseball game. It says Eve stole first and Adam second. Solomon umpired the game. Rebecca went to the well with the pitcher, and Ruth in the field made a name. Goliath was struck out by David, a base hit made on Abel by Cain, and the prodigal son made a great home run. Brother Noah gave checks out for rain. Now old St. Pete was checking errors, also had charge of the gate. Salome sacrificed Big John the Baptist, who wound up ahead on the plate. Delilah was pitching to Samson when he brought down the house with a clout. And the angels that day made a double play. That's when Adam and Eve were thrown out. Now Jonah wailed and went down swinging. Later he hopped up again. A line drive by old Nebuchadnezzar made Daniel warm up in the pen. Satan was pitching that apple. It looked as though he might fan them all. But then Joshua let go with a mighty blow, and he blasted one right at the wall, shouting, come along and let's play ball.